I got a treat for you. This is actually one of my favorite guests. I haven't talked to Jim in a little bit, but he's as important now as he's ever been. If we want to try and understand the root of the Rooney Rule and the importance of the Rooney Rule and how it's changed and how it can continue to change, why not talk with, I don't know, a Rooney about all of this? So Jim Rooney joins me. His book, A Different Way to Win, is a love letter to what the Rooney family has tried to do for years to make it more equitable of hiring in the NFL. And Jim joins me now. Jim, first of all, it's great to see you. I haven't seen you in a little bit. I'm happy that you are still doing well and that you are still trying to fight the good fight.
Lawrence, thank you. And yes, it's really good to be with you. I love what you do and how you do it. And so it is an important conversation. Unfortunately, you know, in the larger, you know, political, economic world that we live in, we need to have this conversation more than I think we should. But there's no question that there is a battle against these efforts right now. And so I'm glad that we're talking about it.
How to give people some background on this, because the folks, I've read the book and it's fantastic. And I know that you're going out on a nationwide speaking tour this year, and which I think is also great. I'd love to know when it clicked for you on what your father and what your family were trying to do here.
Wow, that's a really good question. Look, Lawrence, I grew up in the suburbs, and you know, my parents were, and my grandfather, I think, who always lived in the city and was a boxer, and you know, was exposed to communities that were different from his entire life. Then my father grew up in a similar world, but probably took a step further away. And then the reality is, you know, I was even a step further away. And, you know, so many friends and good friends have attitudes that I don't like. I think are close-minded. Some of them are frankly horrible. But then there was always this experience of our team and what was going on with our team. And I remember we're at a place called Bimbo's Pizza. And, so this is 1974, 75, and I'm the eighth of nine kids. And, you know, someone says something at a table next to us, and they all have Steeler hats or shirts on. And my sister Kathleen, and I don't know if they use the N-word, you know, it was the 70s was a different world, as you know, Lawrence. So I don't know what happened, but I remember Kathleen getting up and saying, you know, all those guys that you're cheering for, that you're wearing that stuff for, many of those guys are black. And she just said that to them. She was probably 22 years old at the time, and walked away. And that was a moment in my life that I realized, okay, these stories and all these other pieces, there's something more to it than just cheering for these folks. And it's might be different than than the viewpoints that a lot of people around me that sort of aren't in the family have. So let's say the 70s, there was some sort of awareness when I was, you know, 11, 12 years old. So
you have that awakening, and then, you know, as the Rooney family starts to try and figure out how it can help in hiring, what do you think was behind it? Like, well, what are the things that you feel like it rose to the level of not just being something that the Steelers were trying to do, but something that the NFL as a whole should try and do?
Yeah, well, you know, let's go back even a little further. And I know we've talked about this, but I think it's important because I think the visceral experience, particularly in boxing, got my grandfather and father to see something. You know, my grandfather, you know, the Steelers were, I mean, you know, he was, you know, not quite as original as you know, the Bears. My friend George McCaskey says every team, but the Bears are an expansion team, because we always say, well, we were part of the original, and he teases us and says, no, you guys were 10 years late to the party. So, but you know, my grandfather's more successful activity was as a boxing promoter. And as you know, Lawrence, he promoted the first fight, open heavyweight fight between two black fighters, Ezra Charles and Jersey Joe Wolcott, in 55. So, you know, you had Joe Louis before that, you know, but what was going on was, it was just merciless the way black men were being abused in the ring and oftentimes being killed. And I don't want to say as importantly, but they weren't getting the purses when they would win. And, you know, there were the opportunities were so limited. And so my grandfather's boxing promotion business was considered in the black sports community. And he made his mistakes, and I could talk about those. But in the black sports community, it was really considered that it was fair, and that a guy could get his purse, which was a huge thing, you know, that you had an opportunity. So I think that my father saw that, and then, you know, we take it to the Steelers. We talk about, you know, Bill Nunn, Tony Dungy, the folks in the Steelers, Joe Gilliam, that had such an impact. But it was the stuff that happened in the 50s. It was my father's work in the 70s that then you get to the point. I mean, you can't believe it's 25 years later, but you get to this point where, throughout the 90s and then 2000, you know, why in the world is it so hard for Tony Dungy to get a job, and so many other folks? But we had such a close relationship to Tony. We knew he was my father certainly knew he was a better candidate than so many other candidates. And why wouldn't he get the interviews? And when he got the few interviews that he did, which is absurd that he had so few, why wasn't he getting the jobs? And that sort of took it from a conversation that my father would have with other owners. I think Paul Tagliabue was always, you know, sympathetic, empathetic. I think Al Davis certainly led, even though my father and Al didn't see eye to eye. You know, so I think there were folks that understood that this was important. But you know, it was, I guess we would say what really drove the crystallization was Tony getting fired from the Bucks. You know, it sort of provided an opportunity for a whole host of things to come in and change. So I know that was sort of long-winded, but that history, both with my family and the experience in there, and then sort of the technical mechanisms of guys not getting interviews, not getting jobs, and my father saying, oh, these are the pieces that need to be somehow fit together. I'm not going to say that the Rooney Rule has you know, close that puzzle gap yet, but that was the realization for him that it needed to be, you know, raised to that level.
How do you feel about the effectiveness of it now? Because, Jim, I'm in kind of a weird space with it. I know how important it is, and I do think it needs to continue in some shape or form. The other part for me, though, is kind of being happy that I'm seeing candidates in this coaching cycle that even our retread coaches, like of color, that are getting another opportunity. I think that has been one of the real important things that the Rooney Rule has done. And I look at the candidates this year and I go, well, that's good. Like there are candidates that people are considering legitimate candidates, not token candidates to just satisfy the rule. That being said, I know that there are candidates. Like, I look at the situation with the Patriots and I go, okay, they kind of jumped ahead of the line on being able to hire people because they had two interviews in person, which is part of the rule. And right. Two minority candidates, which is Pep Hamilton and Byron Leftwich, who they had. But that feels like they opened the door to do that just so that they could eventually hire Mike Vrabel. And we'll see who they end up hiring. I know that Aaron Glenn took his name out of that conversation with the Patriots, and I wonder if he looked at it and said, I got no chance at that job. Why do they want to bring me in and interview me? So I'd love to know, like, where things stand with you right now on the effectiveness of the rule and how it can continue to morph and shape and be better?
Yeah, so I like what has been done over the last, really since my father died. I mean, you know, the story of my father and then John Wooten, you know, the great, he was a lineman for the Browns for years. And then he became, you know, probably along with Bill Nunn, you know, the most well-known, for lack of a better term, black, you know, executive in the football operations side. So John Wooten and my father really fought for whatever effectiveness there was. And there was some good effectiveness early on with the rule. You know, John retires and dad dies, and you saw the cliff happen. You know, we went off a cliff. You know, you never want to go off a cliff. You wish progress was always steady. But I do think it really woke folks up to, you know, having two in the pool, going into the coordinator's position, having greater transparency. And then I think the unique one that really got pushback from the black coaches was the incentive program. So the original incentive idea was, you know, if I hire a minority coach, I get an additional draft pick, third round pick. And, you know, it was the, you know, so many of the black coaches said, wait a minute, I don't want to get hired because you're going to get some benefit for picking me over someone else. And so I think they rethought, and you know, now it is, if you mentor someone and they get hired to another team, you as the mentoring program, if you will, and the 49ers have really benefited from this with draft picks. But I think that was a really unique idea. I really like it because when you look at culture change, if you study culture change, and now I'm patting myself on the back, not that I deserve it, but you know, I have a master's in organizational development and culture. You know, if you're really going to transform your culture, it has to be incentives. You know, you need, with things like the Rooney Rule, you know, you need some punishments or you know, some parameters, but that doesn't really change culture. That just points out when someone did something wrong that we're not going to put up with is wrong. But to transform culture, it has to be incentive driven. And so I like that we came up with a unique incentive. So I like the rule better today than where it was 10, 15 years ago. You know, where the biggest problem is, and this goes back to and we can talk, I don't want to be the only one talking in this conversation, but is the historical dearth for, you know, clearly reasons of racism around the quarterback position. So, you know, you had so few black quarterbacks, then you have few black quarterback coaches become offensive coordinators. So if you look across the board, college coaches, which is still too low, defensive coordinators, special teams coaches, you know, quality control, anywhere you might get a head coach, everywhere is significantly better, or the opportunities for minorities are significantly greater, except one, and that's the offensive coordinator. And you know, Lawrence, we live in an offensive driven league. That's where I think a lot of work has to be done. And there's a lot of things that can be done. There's a lot of ideas out there, but that has to improve. Almost, you know, this conversation and where you're at now with sort of talking about coaches across the league, you know, yes, we have to get head coaches and we're going to talk more about head coaches, but from a problem solution standpoint, I think not having that solved is, you know, not having the offensive coordinator position solved or not having more minority offensive coordinators is a bigger problem because you're naturally going to go towards offensive coaches with the rules that exist in football and particularly NFL.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
I'm glad that you said that, because that's one of the things that I think about too, where, you know, when I was covering the Bears every day, it was during Lovie Smith's tenure. And yep. So like that Dungy tree, like we have seen all of those coaches like rise up to be given an opportunity, but almost all of them are on the defensive side. And you see those guys be given opportunities, whether it was Lovie Smith or Mike Tomlin, for example. Like, we know where that tree branched off to. I'm trying to find
Herm Edwards
as well. Right. Like, I'm trying to find out where the offensive, like, patient zero tree is. And I don't really have a good answer. Now, the good news is here in Chicago, Thomas Brown, who came from Sean McVay's tree, and Sean McVay, I think, does an incredible job of trying to move coaches to the next part. I think that that's so valuable. Like, we talk about, like, allyship. And obviously, like, the Rooney family has been a huge ally. I love when coaches, whether it's Sean McVay, Bruce Arians was another coach that I thought did a wonderful job of trying to bring along. Like, if you look at that group of coaches that won the Super Bowl with Tom Brady, if you look at that, the picture of that coaching staff, I think it's exactly what your dad would have loved, you know, where
most diverse staff to ever win a Super Bowl.
Yeah. And the beauty of it to me was it showed that here it is. You can have the best quarterback in the game. You have one of the best coaches in the game. And look on that staff. It's women. It's minority candidates, like, all over the place. And that's what I hope that we get to, a place where that is a little bit more normal. And I also think that it needed to be celebrated more.
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. I, you know, a little bit self-serving, but I talked a lot about it that year because it was a celebration. It went back to you know, things like you said, were important to my father, but it also was a demonstration that, you know, this can be effective. And why, you know, that the thing that, you know, bewilders me the most is, you know, like, I understand small-mindedness. I understand we do things that we're all used to and more comfortable, and that all happens. But, like, if you want to win, you know, I would turn every stone over. I mean, it just makes no sense to me. You know, I want someone that's going to help me win, and you know, I'm going to spend all my time trying to find every single person that could, because I don't believe in the one coach situation. I believe that good organizations and good culture will develop people. And so if you have someone that has certain strengths, you know, and not look, you have to be able to hit the curve. You know what I mean? Like, you have to know the X's and O's enough to manage your decision making and your staff. So everyone, but outside of that, you know, I want someone that is going to add to my culture. I don't want someone that fits in my culture. I want someone that's going to make my culture better. And, you know, that can be a multitude of things. And some of that is a different point of view, a different experience, an ability to relate to, you know, 78% of the team in ways that, you know, others can't relate. And that doesn't have to be what your final decision's on, but all of those things should be factored in. And if you have a good organization, I believe that will develop someone's talent, you know, that will come about and you can get to the point where you're winning championships. Having said all of that, you know, that's large picture. You know, we need exactly what you're talking about. We need Sean and Kyle Shanahan. We need these offensive gurus to really embrace this, because it's going to come through their trees that we're going to really be able to I think tackle this problem better.
I will say though, it is, and I may have been the only person who noticed it or cared about it, but if you look inside the NFC North and you look at who runs the teams in the NFC North, that's very exciting. Ryan Poles for the Bears.
Yep.
Brad Holmes for the Lions. Kwesi Adofo-Mensah for the Vikings. I would imagine that anyone, whether it's the Fritz Pollard Alliance or anyone involved with continuing to bring about change with the Rooney Rule, you look at the NFC North and you say, this is what we're talking about. Here were opportunities that were given out. And in the cases of Adolfo Mensah and Brad Holmes, incredible success attached to it.
Incredible. And, you know, especially where, you know, Adolfo is right now, like ahead of the curve. You know what I mean? Because you would look at that team and say, okay, they're a year away. And, you know, they had an amazing run this year. So look, that certainly from a statistical standpoint probably says, well, it's just that one individual. Can you extrapolate that? I don't know, but it's still another case in point, you know, that there is this you know, plethora of success. I mean, the same thing with the Ravens, who have been so successful. God, my mind just went blank. The president of the Ravens.
Well, Ozzie was there for a long time.
Ozzie was there for a long, long time. But the president now was with the Browns and then went to the NBA and came back. And I should look it up. But I could have remembered if I didn't tell myself I can't remember.
It happens. Like, oh, Sashi Brown.
Yeah, Sashi. I mean, so I think Sashi has done a phenomenal job as well. So you look at that, those records, and, you know, so I think you're right on to something. I think that's really important. I think they can make a difference, but I do think these offensive gurus have to also embrace this so that we're mentoring folks that will come up in their systems. You know, the look, I hope the Steelers win the next 10 Super Bowls, but if you go to an NFL practice, it is an offensive driven practice. I mean, we have to look at this offensive side of the ball.
All right, a couple more things before I let you go. One's very personal to me, and I'm guessing the one's very personal for you. Now that we've had some time and some distance, what do you feel is your father's legacy in this regard?
Well, I mean, look, you can't deny that there is a lot of criticisms of the Rooney Rule. I guess I kind of laugh these days, though, now that you know, folks on the right, you know, folks on the left have been upset, and I think rightfully so, about the sham interviews and the lack of progress. Now, you know, the folks on the right are taking aim at it and saying it's unconstitutional, which I think is actually a very weak argument when you look at you know, the sort of legal parameters of the rule. There is no quota in there, and it's in the interview node, not the hiring node. So you know, on one hand, I think, well, he must have done something well if he's got something that both sides of this country are mad at him for, because no one knows how to hit the middle anymore. So I think of that. But I do look at the negative side, and it's frustrating. And I think that there's a reality that you could easily say he came up short. I also look at it, though, it changed the conversation. You know, the diverse slate is a concept that is, you know, 20 years older than Dan Rooney got involved, or at least at this level. But the reality is giving it a name, having a story, having Bill Nunn and Tony Dungy and the story of this great team in the 70s kind of attached to this, I think allowed people to humanize the rule. That I think has been important. And even if it gives people sort of this, you know, sort of negative thought on Dan Rooney, I think at the end of the day, he did something that changed the vernacular around hiring, and he humanized it, which is what he did as a leader.
Okay. Now, you know, I'm in Chicago. You know that I have a lot of Bears fans that listen and watch. We're trying to get a hold on how this can turn around for the Bears. And you mentioned George McCaskey earlier. What's been your experience with George and the McCaskey family, and what's it going to take for them to take that next step to get back to some glory?
Look, George is a friend. You know, Mrs. McCaskey to me is one of the most important people in the history of this league. You know, not only what her father did, but the way she has led, I think is, you know, we talk about diversity. You know, I mean, here is someone who's played, you know, a spiritual role, I guess, in the league for longer than anyone else, I think maybe ever has. And, so, you know, I have nothing but the utmost love and respect for them. I think, you know, we all need quarterbacks. And I think if this kid, and there's every reason to believe he will, is successful, you know, everyone will be saying the next coach of the Bears is a genius. So, you know, so I think the trend, even though there were some games that people might be frustrated with, the trend there is definitely on an upswing.
All right. Well, Jim, take care of our guy, Justin Fields, man. He's a good dude. And I can't believe I'm glad that he landed in with a coach like Tomlin and in a city like Pittsburgh. That's a good young man who I think at some point is going to pay big dividends for someone who invests in him.
Yep. I totally agree. And wherever it ends up being, I don't know what what's going to happen from a contract standpoint, but I think him working this year with Mike, even having Russ, you know, as a mentor, I think those were all really good things.
I agree with you. So where's your tour going to be? How can people see you out on the speaking tour?
So, I mean, the world we live in, half of it will be on screens like this, but you know, we just came out with an audio version of the book, and in there we have, a bunch of interviews that weren't in the written book. So you get to hear Franco Harris, you get to hear Joe Green, you get to hear Mel Blunt. Great interview with me, Mel Blunt, and James Shaq Harris, you know, who was the quarterback of the Rams and Bills. You know, first black man to be a quarterback in a championship game in NFL history. And we talk about Bill Nunn and, you know, the Steelers' great scout, who was, I think, the third black scout in the NFL, and all Bill did to bring HBCU players to the NFL and to the AFL. So that conversation was just a powerful, you know, you only get 10 minutes of it, but it was an hour and a half with me and those two guys. It was just amazing. Rocky Blyer's on the book, and he tells a story sort of different than he ever has about coming back from Vietnam and what it was like, how my father's impact on him. So I read the book, and I think I do a nice job, I hope, but you also get these intimate connections from folks whose lives were impacted by my father. So that's something we're really enjoying. We're out here sort of pounding the pavement for that.
A Different Way to Win is a great book. I highly recommend it for anyone who wants to learn more about the league, the history of the league, the Rooney Rule, and the Rooney family. Jim, as always, I appreciate your time. Thank you for being so generous with it and breaking all of this stuff down.
Lawrence, we got to do this. I think it's been like 3 years. We got to do this at least once a year.
Yeah, you're right.
I love talking to you. So
same here. You're right. And now we can actually get into a room together. Like 3 years ago, it was a little touch and go, but now we can actually get into a room together. So I'm looking forward to that too. Thanks so much for your time. Thanks for really educating our audience.
Thank you, Lawrence. Great work. I appreciate being on. Should I hit? You good?
Yeah, we're good. Everything has been recorded and processed. At any point, are
you doing this as a podcast? Are you part of the radio? Is this go on a show?
This will. So it'll be on my podcast, and I'm taking portions of it and putting it on the radio show.
Yeah. Okay. That's what I thought.
Yeah, because I didn't want it to be interrupted. You know, like I didn't. You know, we have to take a break or anything like that. So I'm going to put the podcast out, and I'll send Jill a link of the podcast. And then I wanted to grab some of it and be like, okay, here's what Jim had to say about the rule. Cause we're talking about it now with,
you need to.
Absolutely. You know? So I'm going to take a portion of it and then put it on the show.
I have been trying to kind of get out there. Like, I don't want to get in the heart of the political fight, But I want to be clear with everyone, like, look, and you know, I don't care what your politics are, but like, there's absolutely an effort, you know, to shut these endeavors down. And you know, the consequence, I mean, you know, that ruling of you know, the school ruling for Harvard and UNC,
it's, I mean, that's horrifying. Gonna have an
impact, right, across the board. And this is in that same vein. I mean, you know, I'm open to better ways. And certainly if, you know, younger white men aren't getting opportunities, let's find ways to make that part of this. But you can't say that the deltas are this big in health and wealth and housing, and we're not going to look at it from an opportunity. We're not going to look at, you know, how opportunities are arising for folks as part of the solution. It's just, it's absurd. So, and it's scary.
Well, let me do this. I have a bunch of connections of people here in the city. And I teach too. So,
where do you teach at?
I teach at DePaul University, my alma mater. So
I've been guest lecturing in all these sports management programs across the country. If you ever want me to come in, I love it. And I'd love to do it with you too. It would be fun to have, you know.
Great. And I mean, I have a master's from the University of Alabama as well. So I'm going to give Jill's information out so that people can get in touch with you, so you can do more of this to help educate people.
Yeah, I'd love to. And, you know, I really appreciate that.
Oh, man. Anytime. Thanks so much for your time. And I'll be in touch. Okay.
Good. Thanks, Lawrence.
All right, Jim. Be well, man.
Good luck with the Bears. I hope they get the right guy here.
Man, it'd be nice if they did. Really be nice.
Like I said, I think with Kevin, I think they're going in the right direction. I think if they just stabilize things, if you can protect this kid, I think he's going to be pretty good.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. Be well, stay well, and keep fighting the good fight.
Thanks, Lawrence.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.